Hello and welcome to Real Bible Stories. Join us as we deep dive into the historic, religious, cultural, political, and emotional context surrounding the real lives of real people in the Bible and the stories we've all grown to love. Hello and welcome to Real Bible Stories. I'm your host, Imran Ward, and we are joined by my wife, Selena.
Hi.
And our teacher, Pastor Ryan Brown.
What's going on, everyone?
I'm sure that if you're tuned in here, you're noticing that something's a little bit different. We are now doing this on video, all right? So, really what's happening is that...
By the way, Imran did not tell us we were doing this on video, so I mean,
Selena
are
our... We showed up, and
he
showed
up looking great. The rest of us are...
It's like, huh.
I don't know if... I basically figured it out on the way over. I was like, if I wasn't going to do it now, I'm not going to do it. So we're going to try it out. So we are in the new Palms Baptist Church studio that we've been working on the last like 2 months in here. And so this is now the first kind of large format broadcast that we're doing inside of the room. So we're just taking the podcast, and now you are now seated in the room with us as we enjoy a Real Bible Stories message from our pastor, Pastor Ryan Brown.
And our coffee, which usually it's more bougie than this. But,
yeah. So
they got you.
Yeah, actually got the cups and the milk and all the things. But
so Imran, I think you got to tell them what's going on.
Well,
why are we here and why are we not bougie today?
So usually we're doing this recording in my house, but what is going on now is that we're actually packing up our house. So if you've been listening to a couple episodes, you know that I'm in the Marine Corps. And so I actually got orders over to Quantico, Virginia. So I'll be heading out there in the next month and a half to 2 months, right? So my wife's heading out, Selena's heading out in the next couple of weeks, and then I'll be heading out a few weeks after that. So this episode, we actually, I wanted to spruce it up, and we're actually sprucing it up because it's going to be our last one for a while. We're going to be pausing and really praying a lot about what this transition is looking like and if we can really continue the podcast in the way that we really want to while we're in Virginia and Ryan's here. I mean, God made a path for us to build this studio in our last 2 months here.
That's
so
very true.
That's this didn't exist
here.
Yeah, we didn't have an option 2 months ago, and now we have a really, really nice place where Ryan can come and teach from, even if we're doing it kind of disparate. So just keep us in your prayers as we transition over to Virginia. Keep Ryan in your prayers as he continues to grow as a young pastor and teaching the youth of our church and also leading this this pastoral ministry as well, that is Real Bible Stories. I actually got such an awesome story from him right before we started, where a truck driver that goes to our church told him that this podcast is what led him to become saved, that the clarity and the detail that came from kind of the in-depth studies that we do on the podcast is what really drew him in to the family completely. And so I know that this podcast is touching lives. I know that it's changing hearts. I know that it definitely for me, it's grown my depth and my understanding. It's really made it so that God just becomes more and more real every time we do this. And Ryan, I truly appreciate you for that.
No, I appreciate you all. And I'll tell you this, Imran chose a doozy of a week to record this one. To make this kind of our last one for break, because we're going to hit probably one of the most seemingly offensive verses.
Controversial?
Yeah. In the Bible, but it's actually very beautiful once you understand it. But so don't listen to it and then just click off because it, you know, makes you so angry. But the reason I chose this, because I did know this was going to be our last one for a while, is because this is actually when we first started this.
When we first met.
Yeah, not even started this. When we first met, my introduction to Imran and Selena was like, hey, our marriage is in shambles. Like, can you save us? And I'm like, I can't save you to anything, right? Like, you know, only God can
it's
do
like,
that.
I was told to come talk to you.
Yeah, and he's like, well, I was told you're the guy. And I was like, okay, well, you know, what's going on? And some of the initial, I get, not counseling, but like...
discussions.
Yeah, discussions that we were having just about what was going on. And I had brought up this study, because it was one that was somewhat recent at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been asking to do this since we began the podcast, and we've never done it.
And
so
this
I said,
was actually, almost 2.5 years like, ago.
This was, so I was like, you
it's
know.
It's also like one of the most popular studies you've done at the church. It's like the women's ministry talked about it.
It is one people have remembered. That is true. And But I did this for them because we can't go on break, and with the uncertainty of the future and what that's going to look like, and not actually have done it. But to your point, right, with this study, you know what? Before I even get into that story, I think we should read it first, just so people know what we're talking about.
Okay. And, yeah, absolutely.
We're going to be dancing around this, but we're going to anchor here because this is one of those, like I said, it gets everybody's feathers a little ruffled. So,
yeah, so get ready.
Go for it, Selena.
Yeah. All right, yeah. So our verse is 1 Peter 3, verses 1 through 7. Wives,
this is Peter.
In the same way, submit yourselves to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. Your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Rather, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to adorn themselves. They submitted themselves to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her Lord. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers.
And where is that from again?
1 Peter chapter 3, 1 through 7.
1 through 7. Okay. Thank you so much. So actually, before the podcast started, Ryan told us the scripture. I didn't hear him say the scripture.
But I was reading the scripture.
Yeah, she was reading it. And I was like, oh, man, that sounds like Proverbs 31.
And you got like three long answers.
Nope, not Proverbs 31. I was like, oh, well, then it sounds like 1 Corinthians. Because I just, a few months ago now, I was going through 1 Corinthians for my sister's wedding. I did not a tribute. What's it called?
Toast.
A toast. I did a toast and I quoted some scripture out of 1 Corinthians. And Ryan's like, nope, not there either. And I was like, Is this Paul at all? And he's like, nope, not that either. I was like, all right, well, I have no idea. It's like, I know these words, but I don't know why I know the words. So it's Peter. Okay.
It is Peter. And, you know, like I said, it's one of those that if you do not understand what is going on with that statement, it could sound very abrasive, right? Mm-hmm. So women, be subject to your husbands, right? Call him Lord. Men, likewise, even when it goes to the men, right? Men, likewise, like, be considerate of your wife, or she is the weaker partner, right? Like, it's even offensive.
What version of this Bible is this?
This is NIV.
So we're going to break this down because not only does it, one, is that not really the point being made.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually teaching us to a much higher ideal than a Christian ideal that we don't talk about much. And when we do talk about it, we talk about it like almost in the confines of only exclusively marriage, and which is submission, right? Yeah. And submission is a very Christian concept. It is to men, it is to women, it is to husbands, it is to wives, it is to everybody. This is not something just for women and wives, right? Mm-hmm. This is an expectation of every single believer who calls Jesus Lord.
Is to submit.
Submission, right? Yeah. And I think one important thing to note about this particular verse or this series of text, Peter's actually not leading the reader to a point about marriage.
Oh, really?
He's using marriage as an example for something else.
Hmm.
So the whole point of the text isn't even actually meant to be teaching you about marriage.
Hmm.
Now it's exposing a truth or a reality about it, but it's not like he's not teaching on marriage at this point. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
It actually belongs to a much larger main point, and this is a substantiating point to that higher message. So I would also say that submission in itself, it's not as black and white as people like to think it is.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Like this is one of those verses that unfortunately has been abused, used to abuse and suppress women for you know, throughout history.
When you take it out of context.
You take something like this out of context and you take only that, not understanding the larger reality of what it belongs to. It's used against women. And, you know, it says right here in the Bible, right? And if you are not equipped and to understand what it's really saying, like, yeah. you silence a voice, right? Mm-hmm. Where if she's trying to be faithful and God honoring as a woman, and she may be like, that doesn't feel right or doesn't seem to make sense. But at the same time, the Bible says it, and I know Christ is real, but I struggle with that. So I guess I'll do it. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they end up trying to live to a biblical principle faithfully in confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And
that can also leave you open to exploit as well.
Correct.
So even if you're not living in a society that's intentionally suppressing or oppressing women or whomever, if you're saying like, well, I must submit because that's Christ-like, but you're not doing it with the right context in mind, you can be opening yourself up to abuse and exploit as well, you know? So that's because...
And it has been used for that, right? Yeah. And the sad reality is, and we're going to talk about it more in depth here in a second, but, you know, the church over the years hasn't done the best job of really explaining what is a man and what is a woman.
What is a man and what is a woman?
Right. You know, I think the church does well with understanding the value that human beings were created as, and I think it does a good job of explaining identity and purpose and all those things collectively, but what are the differentials that separate men and women? Because mm-hmm. they're obvious, right? And you look in culture right now of, you know, everybody's surprised by the fact that there's so much confusion around gender identity in this culture. And the truth is that I'm not sure a lot of people really understand, you know, what a godly man and a godly woman is. Like, what does that really mean? And so when you misunderstand that and you read a verse like this, it opens the door for a lot more other stuff that could be thrown in there, some craziness, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I was getting ready to tell the story, but when I first taught this, we were all going through 1 Peter. I was the discipleship pastor at that time. I was teaching the men on Thursdays I was teaching the men Tuesdays. The women were doing the same Bible study on Thursdays. So we're going through the same material.
And you
were
teaching it as well?
No.
Okay.
I was not. But we were doing the same material. So my idea for this particular night is I said, hey, as we're talking through this verse, like, I reached out to Trisha Pittman, who was on the podcast at one point, and said, hey, can you just grab you and just a couple other strong women and join the men tonight? And I want you in there as I teach through this so you can provide a feminine perspective of this verse, what these things and concepts mean.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize how vastly different men and women are. Like, we are. Like people know we're different.
I think people realize it, but they it's like for some reason we in recent years have refused to admit it. Like, most of all of human history, we understand that
we're different. People understand but I don't think people understand how different. And a lot of the thing with that is because that's how God made us, right? So it says that in Genesis 1:27, let us make them both male and female in our image. That means the image of men was out of God's image and the image of women are out of God's image. Mm-hmm. They took the feminine qualities of God. We took the masculine qualities of God. So one good thing is that you should actually recognize the difference between men and women.
Yeah.
And as a woman, you should be looking at men and saying, what does understanding men, particularly if you're married, right? Like, my husband, what is he communicating to me about the character of God? Because he was created in his image. So the things that are like central to his desires and his purpose and what he needs, which seems to be so much different from me, like, what does that show me about who God is? And men, likewise, we should be looking at women, be like, well, as women are, like,
created out of his character.
In his image. Mm-hmm. And taking on that quality, what do they teach us about God?
Yeah.
Right? So
that's kind of like fascinating too, because when you put those, if like with marriage, the concept of marriage, I guess the closest to an image of God we would have would be the man and the woman together. Mm-hmm. They would be closer to the full character.
In unity of the full identity and image of God.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
In marriage, right?
Yeah,
and
definitely.
You know, women, I think, I was just actually talking to my wife about this right before I came. There just seems to be this thing, you know, with women where it's, they either get into this place of either they feel a place of insufficiency that I'm not enough. Like I'm not enough as a wife. I'm not enough doing enough as a mother, doing enough as a daughter or a sister or, you know, whatever. And if they're not feeling the sense of shame of not being good enough, they're on the other end being told you're too much, right? You're too sensitive. You're being too dramatic. You're being too emotional. You're right. Particularly things men tell them, right?
Yeah.
And they've then they're like, okay, so now I'm being too much, but if I'm less of that, it's not who I feel like I need to be, but then I'm insufficient there. It's like, where is that sweet spot for women? Yeah. And men need that too, right? The reason I'm kind of focusing on the women though is because of this verse, right? And this is really kind of where we're going to be anchored to understanding this a little bit more. But my point was, is that I brought in the women and to this men's Bible study to get their perspective, and it went really, really great. Like, it was awesome. So Trissa was like, hey, can you do the same thing for us Thursday? I was like, you want me to bring some men in? She's like, well, can you just teach it? Like, I think just you being there providing that perspective would be enough. I'm like, oh, that'd be great. Yeah, awesome, right?
Yeah.
Not thinking about the fact that I'm coming in to teach on submission to your husband. And so I go walking in there, and, you know, Trisha's like, we're going to be learning about how to submit to our husbands. And here comes a man walking in with this group of women. I could tell you what, the looks I got, the tension in there.
Oh,
when
man.
We first started, I was like, oh boy, I was not prepared for this. And
why didn't she warn me?
Oh yeah, it was palpable, right? And it turned out fine.
There's a texture in the air.
yeah, it turned out fine, but but initially, right? Like, there's, because it's one of those verses. So as we get into this, let me just kind of, I think, crush a couple myths about submission as a whole.
Okay.
Because like I said, it's a larger Christian concept, right? I think some people believe that submission in itself is like almost like it shows that you're weak. That you're weaker. So if you're to be an alpha man, right? An alpha male, you know, to submit means I have to go be a beta.
And I think that's definitely a big cultural thing.
It is.
Yeah. As one that interacts with hundreds and hundreds of 18-year-olds every day.
Marines, right?
You know, young Marines of our nation's fighting corps. It is so important to them to be seen as strong at the expense of reason, at the expense of intelligence, at the expense of slowing down and making clear and concise decisions. They're more focused on being cool or being out and above than doing something that makes sense. You know, it's like, if this guy can jump here, I'm going to try and jump up here. Oh, and I'm going to try and jump up here. Oh, I broke my ankle, you know, but I was cool when I did it. You know, it's like that. And I guess I was there too.
Yeah,
that was definitely me. Well, Selena's like, yeah, that was you in high school. For some reason, I married you.
But you also see, though, like, you know, in particularly, and I see this with women too. Women, and bigger probably more than men do. Would you disagree with that? I tend to see.
How's Christ Women's Fellowship with the bickering?
Right. There is a lot of drama. I'm just saying.
She's like,
generally speaking,
I'm not about to confess anything.
I know you don't want to, but
confess anything.
Generally. There's more drama within those circles, but I will say this: when I see it with men, right, is that when you see those, it's you got two men who are, their egos are matched, and where one of them just needs to submit, right, and there's generally always some sort of construct or like there's a boundary to understand. No, like, as a man, I need to submit to this other man in this issue, in this situation. Yeah. And, you know,
there's like an established chain of command or something.
Rules of manhood, right? Like, we just understand, or like, but I mean, even beyond that, like, and part of what we're going to talk about tonight is like a hierarchy of, look, if you're in church and you're in it with your, against your pastor, right? There comes a point where you have to submit to your pastor.
Yeah.
You're told to do that, right? Marriage, there comes a point where you have to submit to your wife. You have to submit to your husband. Like, there's just certain, you know, boundaries that are set with that. And what you see is when men feel like, particularly man to man or woman to woman, it's like, well, if I submit, then I'm going to be seen as the weaker the one. Beta, right?
Yeah.
And that's not true. a submission takes strength. Sometimes it takes more strength than it is to continue going, right? The other thing I would say too
is, I think that to submit is different than to be kind of broken into that submission. So like if you were like, I'm not going to submit, and then you get broken into that and now you're forced to submit, then that could, I guess, could be seen as weak. But if you submit out of strength of understanding, like, it is not my place to be that right now.
Well, forced submission is slavery.
Ooh.
Right? So being forced to submit to something, that's tyranny. That is not, particularly as we're speaking to scripture, right? Mm-hmm. Is that's not the freedom that we have in Christ.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, God's not a tyrant. Mm-hmm. So forced submission, you know, that's not the kind of submission we're talking about, right? And I think that's a good that you brought that up because that's different, right?
So to submit is you choose to submit yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
It is a choice. And I think like another piece of this, it also doesn't necessarily mean like obedience in the sense of like sometimes submission can be accepting the reality of a situation, of a structure, of things, particularly powers and things of that sort outside of your control.
Yeah.
There's just certain things you can't control.
That's true. Absolutely.
Right? And you just have to submit to that fact. Like I have to submit to the fact that, you know, our government, you know, isn't always matching my ideals.
Yeah. It's human beings leading human beings. It's imperfect people leading imperfect people.
It's broken people leading a broken country. And you have to submit to that reality if you're going to be effective.
Yeah.
To the purposes of God and his kingdom, right?
And even just to bring that down, if then a marriage, like fundamentally speaking, it's a broken man trying to lead in a marriage. It's a broken woman trying to lead in a marriage. It's a broken man trying to submit. It's a broken woman trying to submit. And so that's never going to be done perfectly either. Mm-hmm. And so you have to submit to that reality as well, that your spouse isn't perfect and they're not going to be perfect.
If you want to be good at submission, you have to accept the reality that the person you married, the person you work for, your government, you know what I mean? Whatever that is, you have to accept the fact that they are broken people. They are not perfect. Mm-hmm. So your marriage is not going to be perfect. They're not going to be exactly how you want them to be 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Right? Like submission requires that. And I would also say, I think another thing people get confused with this, just because you submit does not mean you agree. Submission does not mean agreement. It actually assumes the opposite, right? Like, I don't have to submit. Like, if I got home from work today and my wife is like, hey, I just bought you this 3-day chartered fishing trip in San Diego.
Wow.
I'm like, all right, honey, I'm going to submit to you in this. I'm going to go on my 3-day chartered fishing trip.
Submit to accepting this trip.
You know what I'm saying? That's not submission.
You submit to this gift.
You submit to things you disagree with. Yeah. So submission actually assumes disagreement. So just be clear, right? If a Christian principle is submission, then that means that there's going to be things as a believer you disagree with that you have to submit to.
I mean, Jesus literally says you have to pick up your cross each day and die to yourself daily, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, which assumes that your flesh wants something, you want something, but you have to be willing to submit yourself to the things of God. And so if you're willing to assume, if you're, you know, of the kingdom and you're saved, then you're willing to work on submitting yourself to Christ. Why not also work on submitting yourself to this life partner that, you know, Christ has blessed you with?
And this is what we're going to talk about, right? Because submission as a whole, right? Like, I think some people think that if I submit, then that's a admission that I am wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, if you and me are in a disagreement and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to submit to Imran in this, that's just a confirmation that, all right, Imran, you were right, I was wrong, right? That's not true.
Yeah.
What biblical submission looks like is saying, I don't agree with you in this, but I will submit to it, like with you knowing the fact that I disagree with it, but I'm going to submit to you. Just please be considerate of me, which is what it's talking about here in terms of marriage. Be considerate of my perspective of this, right, as I go into this submission, but then not bringing it up after.
Mm-hmm.
Submission is not saying, all right, I'm like, particularly in marriage, right? Submission is not, I'm going to submit to you in this decision. Then you make that decision. And then months later, you bring up the fact that you made this poor decision. I didn't want to even do this. I didn't want to. And you bring up that fight again or that argument or that debate again. It's like, that's not submission either.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like but that's just you tabling the argument, right? That's not real submission either.
That's true. And then, but I mean the reverse of that too. If that submission does take place, it would be tyrannical for the other party to see themselves as the victor and to lord over. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I knew I was right. You know, like,
that's not what it means.
You know,
them submitting to you doesn't mean that you're right. Them submitting to you doesn't mean that they also think you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think people, I think particularly like married people need to have this conversation to understand this, right? Like if Selena submits to you, that does not mean Selena agrees with you or you've changed her mind.
Yeah.
Where she thinks you're right. Right. It's understanding that and almost in an essence of that, that should turn your heart. She's like, man, like I know she doesn't agree with me and she's submitting to me. Like, That should almost soften you mm-hmm. a bit to be like, hey, okay, hold on. Let's talk about this a little more then.
Yeah, and what that can lead to if you're doing that well is effective compromise, you know? So it's like, okay, let's continue to work through this. Yes, there's going to be some things where it's the black or white. We have to make a decision. But the vast majority of things, there's a compromise there somewhere as long as you're willing to be open and honest and have that conversation. But just... a lot of people don't. They stick on their side and it's like, it's my way or the highway, but that's not effective communication. That's not effective compromise. That's not submission. That's not building the marriage, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And submission feels like a sacrifice because you truly think you're right. So it's like party A thinks they're right. Party B thinks they're right. And
yeah, the disagreement, right?
Yeah.
It assumes disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just don't submit to things you agree with. You know what I mean? Like, so
you just have them.
I also think that that's very telling, the fact that how often submission is mentioned and is told of our expectation to it, we don't follow some fairy tale Bible. It's a very practical, real Bible. It's very real about the fact that you're going to have disputes. You're going to have disagreements, among believers within the church, in your marriage, at your workplace, with your kids, right? Like you're going to have disagreements. You need to be good at submission. If you want to have a sustained witness to the world. The last thing I would also say is submission is not cowardice either. Kind of like it assumes disagreement. It also, submission assumes strength. You could say in terms of like proper English,
mm-hmm.
if you get really angry at me, to where you like buck up and you're like, hey, if we don't come to terms soon, like we're going to fight.
Yeah.
And I get really scared because you're big and you go to the gym and I'm like, okay. You know, that's not really that's me not submitting. Submission. That's just me being afraid.
That's like, it's just conceding. You're just conceding that fight.
Right. Yeah. So what real submission looks like is you buck up. And I'm like, well, I could buck up too, right? And I could throw a punch and you know, we could do this, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then choosing not to, right? Yeah. It takes
kind of like the term
strength.
Meek.
It is meek. Meekness, yeah. You cannot be meek if you're weak, nor can you be submissive if you're not meek,
mm-hmm.
right? So submission requires strength from both people.
Yeah.
A weak person has a really hard time submitting because they're just not in control of their emotions. Right,
and
they're just following their emotions wherever it takes them,
yeah,
into whatever decision, whatever words, whatever actions they want to do to, you know, prove themselves right.
Mm-hmm.
Submission requires self control. Submission requires strength. Submission requires like all the fruit of the spirit to do that consistently well. That doesn't mean I'm married. I live in reality, right? Like mm-hmm. me and my wife, there are times where. Our worst fights is when one of the two of us, it's like that perfect storm where we're both exhausted,
mm-hmm.
where we're tired, and then maybe something else happened that we're just already emotionally charged, and it takes a while for us both to come to submission to one another.
Yeah.
And how that often leads is sometimes a really bad argument that the next day we're embarrassed by, then we both come mutually submissive to each other. It's like, man, if we would have just started that way, none of this would have happened.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, it's a lack of submission is often driven out of pride, right? It requires humility to be submissive as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
So, all those,
the opposite of pride would be humility. And,
right. Yeah. And you need humility to be submissive. Mm-hmm. And So that's my point. Like, it takes a holistic Christian life to go to this Christian ideal of submission.
I brought it up, I think, a couple episodes ago when we first had our marriage counseling, and his pastor brought up Ephesians, which is kind of similar to the, like, submit yourselves. I did not take that very well, even though I grew up Christian, but it rode me the wrong way.
We're going to talk about that verse in Ephesians
I think it's worth the question, and we can hold it for later, of like, where, because
it will come up
7 years, you know, later into marriage.
But what I want to do is kind of now paint, I guess, this is more of the key to this verse is more literary than it is cultural. I mean, there's some cultural things loaded behind this, but we've talked about this before, right? Where often when we read our Bibles, we read it very Western. So chapter 3, we think immediately new thought, right? So when chapter 3 starts off with this verse, right? Wives, submit to your husband. We naturally go.
You assume that that's where it's that.
Okay, so the main point, like, we're on a new thought, a new point. Mm-hmm. And this new thought, a new point, it's is like Peter teaching about marriage, right? But as we've talked about previous episodes, right, that's not the case. These chapters and verses did not exist until medieval Europe, right? By a French monk when he decided to do this, you know, based off his personal opinion. This was all written together, right? This was all clumped together as a free flow of thought.
Was this a letter as well? Was Peter, 1 Peter, a letter?
This was a letter, yep.
To which
church? So with that, I want you to back up to chapter 2, verse 13. Because this whole text operates under the umbrella. It is a child of this larger parent verse of what the main point of what's actually being discussed when he says this. Okay? So I'm going to read this. This is 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13. I'm going to read through 17. I just want to say this is the primary point.
Okay.
This is the ideal. This is what Peter is teaching on. This is what he is trying to communicate to his audience. This is it. This is what the point they needed to walk away with.
Okay. And so this is 13 through 17.
Yep.
All right. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as a supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor.
Now, honor the emperor, right? Yeah. Like, it's no different then than it is today, right? Like, That's no different than saying, hey, everybody, show proper respect to everyone you meet. That includes Democrats, that includes Republicans, that mega Republicans, that everybody, right? Yeah. Show respect to everyone. Love the church and the family of believers. Fear God and honor Joe Biden.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Honor the emperor.
Now, some listeners may be like, well, what's wrong with that? Like, and there's a whole nother listeners are like, see, that's a problem, right? Here's the thing. Wherever you land there, what was happening to these believers by the emperor was they were being persecuted economically, pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Some remnants of the Roman Empire, they were being persecuted physically. Mm. They were suffering. They were being thrown in prison. There was a lot going on, right? It wasn't like across the entire empire. It was different everywhere you went. But to them, they're like, they're under the kingship of the emperor. And what does he tell them? Honor the emperor. This is coming from the same Peter, right? If you remember, who he himself was thrown in prison and was rescued like all the way back in Jerusalem, right? Paul, beaten, stoned, thrown in prison multiple times, who was a Roman citizen, who had incurred all that also under the Roman emperor, right? Like, so the point is that, like, wherever you're at, I highly doubt that as a Christian in America under Joe Biden, you have experienced any of that because of your faith. Yeah. Right? You may have gone to prison under Joe Biden, but it's not because you were a Christian, right? It's probably because you did something bad, right?
Just for some reference too, because I was reading kind of the opening in chapter one. So just to reference like who Peter's speaking to, chapter one, verse one, it says, to God's elect exiles scattered throughout the provinces of Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, who have been chosen according to the foreknowledge of God the Father through sanctifying work of the Spirit to be obedient to Jesus Christ and sprinkled with his blood. So it's like he's speaking to a pretty broad audience even here.
All across multiple regions, right?
Yeah.
But I think the primary point is this, right? In verse 13, right? This is what he's teaching on. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake. Okay?
Yeah.
Every one of us. For the Lord's sake, to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority or to governors or those who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and commend those who do right. Now listen, for it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. And I want you to see that literary structure there, okay? Because it really follows kind of these three things, okay? There is a submissive proclamation.
Okay.
Submit to, right? You need to submit to, in this particular case, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the second thing is that there's some sort of human authority identified.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To every human authority, which is, again, this is the overarching point.
Yeah.
And then there's a mechanism by which is given of how you silence the talk of ignorant and foolish people, right? In this particular case, it says by doing good, okay? So the whole point is submit yourselves to Jesus submit yourselves for the sake of Christ to every human authority, for it is by God's will that by you doing good, you will silence ignorant talk and the fools, right? So then what he does is from here, he gives a set of examples of what that looks like.
Okay,
so he's taken very specific situations to these people of what was common then to give them examples of this is what that kind of submission looks like.
Yeah.
The first one he gets into, the first example, are slaves submitting to their masters. So verse 18 through 20. Excuse me. Slaves in reverent fear of God. Now notice how he ended, right? Show respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Okay. Mm. So slaves in reverent fear of God. Submit yourselves to your masters, not only to those who are good and considerate,
but also those
who are harsh. Wow. For it is commendable if someone bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because they are conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good, right? Because how are we supposed to silence ignorant talk? By doing good.
Mm-hmm.
So if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, it is commendable before God. So you see, it's that same structure, right? There's a submissive proclamation, slaves in reverent fear of God, submit yourselves to your masters, right? Human authority identified to your masters. Mechanism for silencing ignorant talk, for it is commendable if someone bears up under the path or the pain of unjust suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now he's saying,
that's pretty intense.
In your suffering, if you are suffering because you are doing good, like that is commendable before God, and people see that, right? Yeah. They'll, just like Christ on the cross, when that thief looks over and says, this man has done nothing wrong. He is submitting himself to the pain of unjust suffering. That's what Christ did, right? Which is exactly what the whole next point is, which I'm going to, before we get there though, we talked earlier, right, is that submission doesn't mean agreement, right? So Peter just told slaves that you're to submit to your masters, whether they're good and considerate or they're harsh, right? Paul in 1 Timothy 1, I think it's verse 10, he states slave masters are one of the most abhorrent type of sins. Anyone who has ever said, I hear this a lot, like, well, the Bible never to condemn slavery. Like, no, it does.
Yeah.
1 Timothy 1:10. Paul says slave masters, it's listed in one of the worst kind of sins, okay? Mm-hmm. So Paul hates slavery. He hates the concept of it. It is not of God. It is counter to the grace of Christ. But then in the book of Philemon, he meets this runaway slave named Onesimus. And what does he tell Onesimus to do? We did a whole episode.
He told him to go back.
Go back to your master. So this is an example of Paul in his leadership disagreeing with the concept of slavery, because he could have took his righteous opinion and, you know, I am against slavery. Let's start at the Underground Railroad, right? But why do we submit? What does it go back to the main point? Submit yourselves for what? The Lord's sake.
Yeah.
Because this is one thing Paul knew with Onesimus. If he would have not had Onesimus return and kept him or let him escape, right, then other Christians could be like, so we need to get the slaves freed. Yeah. And then what that would have done, which slaves, and you know, slaves are defined differently throughout history, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's indentured servants or slaves. There's those who were forcibly, right, put into slavery. There's some who voluntarily went into it. And the conditions for them, you know, were very different throughout history, also throughout different regions of areas. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, we always think of American history and antebellum slavery, right? And not that like one's worse or the other, right? Because it was abhorrent then. But the point being was that he did not agree with it. But slaves made up 25% of the Roman economy.
Of the labor force.
So if the Christian movement had at that particular time became known to be a movement of freeing slaves, then they would have looked at as the way, right? Followers of Christ as those who are trying to crush Rome, right? They would not have been attractive
more persecution
to the gospel.
Yeah.
Right. So the one thing more important than Onesimus's, man, that's a word. Onesimus's
actions,
freedom. So one thing more important than Onesimus's freedom and the righteous position of Paul, the one thing that was superior to that was the gospel.
I see.
Therefore, Paul, Onesimus, submit yourself for the sake of Christ. Does that make sense?
Something I was thinking about while you're mentioning that was one, the writings that came out of some of the Jews that were in the internment camps and the during the Holocaust, and some of the strongest writings that come out of there is those that found peace and tried to do good even while in that abhorrent condition, that impossible situation to predict or even plan for, but they still were able to find a peace in it, and it was by, you know, taking care of those around them, by submitting to the authority that was there, and continuing to represent, you know, God in that environment. And then the thing that popped in my head after that was actually the books that the Power of a Praying Wife and the Power of a Praying Husband, books that Selena's read through. Power of a Praying Wife. I've got Power of a Praying Husband on my desk. The way it was written, I didn't get as into it, but I do remember the points that were brought up in there is that the book really talks about how if you're trying to change your spouse, then look to, through prayer and petition, work on yourself and pray for your spouse. And it talks a lot about that submission process. That combat is not how you change your
spouse.
That
is the whole point of what Peter makes here when we get to the wives submit to husbands piece. So hold on to that.
Okay.
Because that's his point. But we'll get there in due time, right? So example one, right? Main point, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, right? So that by doing good, you should silence ignorant and talk of foolish people, right? First example he gives, hey, slaves, here's an example. Submit yourself to your masters. The second example he gives is the example of Christ and his own submission in verse 21 through 25.
Mm-hmm.
He says, to this you were called because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. He committed no sin. Most deceit was found in his mouth. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate when he suffered. He made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the cross so that we might die to sin and live for righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed, for you were like sheep going astray, but now you have returned to the shepherd and the overseer of your souls. So that's an encouraging word to a slave who is said, like, go back to your harsh master. Submit to your harsh master. He says, remember Christ on the cross. He submitted to the cross unjustly, just like you. But what you need to work on is fall in his footsteps. Mm-hmm. You're going to suffer. You know, you may suffer like Christ did.
Yeah.
But it was unjust because he did good. So go be like Christ. Do good in your situation. No matter the injustice of it, submit to the reality that surrounds it. Mm. Right, you need to submit to the reality of your situation and do good within it. By submitting to your master, you're also submitting to that reality. Right? Does that mean that we live a defeatist life? Like, well, this is just my life. Like, I guess I'm just going to live this. Like, that's not what he's saying. What he is saying is that it is for Christ's sake that you submit. I keep saying that over and over because that's the main point, and it leads us into our text here in a second, where I think it's going to make a little more sense within marriage context.
I do want to note that. Do you have a point?
No, go ahead.
That it's a very real thing from like a military strategy perspective. You have to accept where you are in order to move forward. You know, if you're fighting the reality of the state that you're in, then you're never going to actually be solving the problem that you need to solve. So, I think that to kind of clarify your point.
What is the term? Embrace the suck, right?
Yeah, embrace the suck, right? Like, order
you
to
just gotta embrace it, man.
In order to improve your position, in order to make your position more tenable, more resilient, more defensible, you have to accept that your position sucks.
Hey,
and you have to choose and have the will to like. But I'm going to continue to work to improve it.
I remember this one training event where we were doing a battalion defense training event.
Oh,
so
love
go
those.
Out,
just sitting there all day,
dig the trenches, dig the foxholes, and it just starts pouring rain. Right, yes. And this is winter, so like for those who aren't from around here, the desert means dry. It doesn't mean warm all the time. Like, it's warm in the summer, obviously it's hot,
but it is freezing.
But it
cold.
Is really cold and dry in the winter, and so we're wet, we're freezing, and this was the whole training. Like, we were supposed to be out there for 3 days, just in the defense, practicing defensive operations. Like, there's nobody coming to attack us. Like, it wasn't force on force or nothing.
Yeah,
like we're just. Literally in foxholes, water up to our knees, freezing. And it's just one of those, like, embrace the suck. What you need to do is just accept the reality that it is raining, that it is cold, and this is where you are, and there's nothing that's going to change that. Embrace it.
Because,
so now go be good within that situation.
Because
right?
if you didn't embrace or accept the reality of your situation, let's say you fought it or you went internal or you stopped.
It's when you become miserable.
Now, it's not just when you become miserable. It's actually where you're now the most vulnerable, right? Like, if, let's say this was a real fight and you're in the foxhole and it's raining down on you, but you still have to man that gun. Because if you start wallowing and you're not paying attention, you're not attentive down the line, now you're ripe for exploit, you know? So if let's look in our Christian life, if you're not willing to accept the reality of your situation and then start making intelligent decisions to improve that position based off of that reality that you're in, then you're leaving yourself open to be exploited by those around you, all right? They're going to break through those now weakened defenses because you haven't accepted, you haven't embraced the suck and started making better decisions.
And the whole idea, though, I mean, like you were saying, somebody going internal, which you see a lot. You also see it when I was up in Bridgeport, right? On top of that mountain when it's freezing.
That's where the Mountain Warfare Training
Mountain Warfare Training Center is, where we train for Mountain Warfare for the Marine Corps. And you get so bad that you see some guys just start drinking JP-8 fuel just so they could get off the mountain because they are just... it's a real thing. That's
coming forward.
They actually
doesn't just bring your chair a little more forward. Yeah.
They actually put guards on the generators to keep people from
drinking the fuel.
Yeah, because it gets so they go internal.
Oh my
but
gosh.
The idea of going internal is really again that's just your inability to submit to your situation.
Yeah.
Huh.
So because your refusal to submit, your refusal to submit leads you to inability to cope.
Yeah.
And an inability to cope leads to a lot of other problems.
Yeah, because you start fighting the condition when the condition's outside of your control. And so you start doing more and more extreme things to try and fight the condition, like drinking fuel.
Right.
You know.
So what he says is
or self-harm.
Submit,
you know,
for the Lord's sake so that you, by doing good, you can now silence ignorant talk, right?
Yeah.
Just accept it. Now go do your best in that situation,
yeah,
right?
Make
as a believer,
decisions.
As a man, as a woman, you know, go forward. So that was the second example, right? Example one, slaves, submit to masters. Christ, as an example, gives us Christ's submission on the cross. And then now we get to the third example, which is now wives, submit to your husbands, okay? Hmm. So verse 1-7, I'm going to read it again now. It says, likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives. Okay, so notice what it said there, okay? Wives, submit to your own husbands so that even if some do not obey the word who are not believers, they may be won without a word but by the conduct of their wife. Hmm. Right, so go back up to the main point, right? Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether the emperor, supreme authority, to governors, right? Mm-hmm. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people,
mm-hmm,
right? So live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. So in other words, the problem he's addressing specifically with this,
mm-hmm,
is that there was a lot of women who were becoming saved, but their husbands weren't. Now, that's a problem in every marriage, where that dynamic is true,
mm-hmm,
where one is a believer, one is not.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't think about how often you have to go back to common ground in a marriage, in a family, to build up from, right?
Yeah.
Raising kids. How do I discipline the kids? How do we, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
The confusion that creates a child when, well, mom is telling me that Jesus is the most important thing in life, and then dad doesn't give him a single thought in the day. He's still at home in his pajamas watching football,
mm-hmm,
while I'm here.
He thinks the Steelers are the best things in sliced bread.
So yeah. how is this the most important thing? And if it is the most important thing, then why doesn't dad, mm-hmm, care? And if this is true, then why aren't we doing more for dad? And dad, why aren't you coming to church? Now he gets angry because he doesn't believe in it, but now he thinks his kid hates him.
Yeah.
Or the kid goes like, I'm going to be like dad. And you can't tell me otherwise because dad does it, right?
Mm.
It creates so much problems.
Mm-hmm.
And
when you're unequally yoked in that
right.
way.
And so this is a very real thing, right?
Yeah.
Even worse within this context is that in that those days, like it was accepted that your wife took on the religion of your husband.
Mm.
So if Imran was a believer in the Roman pantheon, and let's say you were, you know, a foreigner from the, you know, from Gaul or, you know, or Spain or maybe Greece, and you served different gods, Egypt, Persia,
yeah,
whatever. You had your own family gods or faith. You two got married, you would accept his gods. That's how it worked. That was what was expected,
huh,
right? So now you find Jesus,
mm-hmm,
and you say, hey, I believe there's only one God. I believe Christ died for me. I don't think I need your pantheon. Not just I don't think. I know I don't need your pantheon. What does Imran now do? Right? See, you see how that creates this strife,
yeah,
right?
Attention.
So he's going to—
And also the families
probably
as
not
well.
Going to do well, right? And the whole point is saying, so you need to submit to your husbands when they're angry about that.
Yeah.
Right? This is going to create issues, but you win him over not by fighting, but in your submission that you can win them over, that they may be won without a word, but by the simple conduct of yourself.
Hmm.
Submission is supposed to be one of the primary identifiers of a believer, that we submit in a way that creates peace and joy, that maintains unity, that is full of grace, right? Contentious believers is not a good look.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean there are not times that you have to stand your ground. You plant your flag and you say, nope, I'm sorry, there's only one God. Christ is the only way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to still be clear and concise about what you believe.
Because
you don't submit away from your faith.
Right. You don't
not what he's saying.
Submission is not the same thing as compromise.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So you're not expected to compromise, but submission in the sense that he's not going to handle this well. But remember, submit yourselves for what? The Lord's sake. Mm-hmm. Right? So that he may be won over, right? Back to chapter 3, that he may be won without a word, but by the conduct of your wife or their wives, by doing that good. Mm-hmm. Right? By doing good, we silence ignorant talk, even if that's your own husband.
Yeah.
Right? Verse 2, when they see your respectful and pure conduct, do not let your adorning be, that may be one without without a word, but by the conduct of their wives when they see your respectful and pure conduct. Verse 3, do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of the hair and the putting on of gold jewelry or the clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious.
Yeah.
Now, I just want to kind of pause there, right? Because as much as you can apply this towards marriage, right, which is, this is, I think, specifically talking about a certain kind of marriage.
Yeah.
One of the elements that we do draw out of this is God's heart for women, mm-hmm. right? Notice what he says. Women, and Selena, I'd really love your perspective on this. But I've been reading this book. It's called Captivating. It's by, this man, John Eldridge, he wrote this book called Fathered by God and Wild at Heart. And his wife wrote a book called Captivated. And I'm reading it because I really would like to understand as a man how to better lead and disciple my wife and understand her, how to better raise my daughter, how to disciple the females and youth. So I'm reading this, and one of the things that, a lot of good things in there, but one of the things that their premise is that women, part of their creation as they were created was to unveil beauty. And you see this within women, this obsession almost with beauty, right? There's a reason that they spend hours getting ready in the morning, or like, I mean, Imran, you don't even have hair, right? You don't even have to brush your hair.
Yeah.
Right? You could be like, up and ready in minutes.
I'm not bald. It was inconvenient. Like, yeah. I have a full head of hair.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, man, $20 a week? That's inconvenient. Whoop, gone.
Like my wife, on a Sunday morning, is up, far before I am, getting ready for church. Mm-hmm. I'm up, take my shower. I'm ready to go out the door. And she's still, doing her thing. Yeah. And I'm like, you're not even dressed. Like, we got to go, right? Like, we're always late, And she's always the reason because she's always beauty, right?
Yeah.
I love her. Anybody who knows
worship.
The Brown family and my wife knows this to be true. This is not a secret. women have that. And there's also that element of women, like, I know it's kind of a stereotype, but like women don't like if a man and a woman are walking down and a woman's walking, she's not looking at the man. She's looking at the woman. She's saying, how beautiful is she? How's she dressed? How's she, what I mean? They're always like comparing themselves because women were part of their created being was to unveil beauty. Like that is a central element of who they are and the function of creation, which is true in the sense because they were the crown of creation.
I have a question though. Would then maybe something of the fall be the their lack of faith in their own in the beauty they've unveiled by just being? Maybe it's like why they feel compelled to compare themselves and all that is like maybe that's part of.
I think it's me and my wife were actually talking about this was she picked up on the fact that she was very impulsive and that she wasn't satisfied. That women can tend to get very. Like, I'm not satisfied with what I have. I'm impulsive of something else that I don't have. And that she went for it. I mean, there's a couple failures there in terms of her and her purpose and identity, but also Adam. Mm-hmm. One of the supreme failures of Adam was that he was passive. Like, mm-hmm. men are created to be aggressive, mm-hmm. right? The right way, not in the toxic way, but we are to be aggressive. Like, if a serial killer breaks down the door, right? Like you don't want a passive man standing between you and that serial killer, right? Yeah.
Or a cockroach.
Right. Me as a man is like, I'm not going to be passive in a situation like that. If I die, I'm not dying a weak, pathetic man. you're going to have to plug mm-hmm. me full of about 40 holes before I go down. And by that time, my family should at least have enough time to escape, right?
Yeah.
So there's times for men to be physically aggressive, but more so aggressive towards sin, aggressive towards I'm seeing danger in my family. Yeah. I'm being aggressive. I'm not going to wait for that to grow. I'm going to attack that immediately, get that out of my house.
Kill culture problems before
aggressive,
problems.
Aggressive, aggressive. The Supreme, what made Israel unfaithful from the time of Joshua through the judges, through, to David, that entire time, they were unfaithful. What were they unfaithful in? God told the men, you need to go fight. Mm-hmm. I told you to go fight. They were passive.
Yeah.
Right? So what you see with Adam is similarly, he was passive in seeing the danger of his purpose and the danger to his wife. He was a passive man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you see that failure, right? And you do see that with Eve too, I think. But I guess I don't want to get too off track on that. Because
what was the question you had?
Because my thing was, is that when you go through like creation week, like we always talk about, mankind is like, we're the epoch, we're the climax of creation, male and female.
Yeah.
Then he creates man specifically, right? Masculine man. And you can almost say that we are the capstone. Like we're the final piece on top, right? So, but then that's not the last thing. God doesn't stop there. He puts Adam into his purpose. So Adam has a standing relationship. He's walking with God. He's living in the purpose God gave him, in the place God gave him. There hadn't been the fall yet. They're good, right? But then God still says it's not good for you to be alone, right? So even walking with God and living in that purpose and doing that, he says it is not good for you to be here alone. So then what he does is he then takes and creates Eve.
Out of his character as well.
Right? And he says, you need the feminine part of this, right? So if men are the capstone of creation, women are the crown. And the whole idea, and even within Jewish thought, was that women were the crown, they were the crowns of their husband. The idea being—
You had to go out and pay a lot.
They're expensive.
Right.
Yeah, the dowry.
To earn the right to marry.
They're still expensive, but
they're expensive because the process of going out, because we had the episode on marriage and that process to go out and you literally present an offer to her father, of sheep, cow, land, whatever you have, to hopefully earn the opportunity to marry.
Right.
We still have that with engagement ring.
No, I mean, but I don't have to go to your family and say, well, I have this home, this job, and then convince your family to give me permission. I did have that conversation with her family.
I was going to say,
but plenty of people don't do that. They just, let's get hitched, that culture is there.
Well, but the idea, though, within even Jewish thought, right, was that—
Sorry, I keep distracting from the question.
Men are the foundation in a sense of we're the solid ground. Women are the crown. Their wives are what make it beautiful.
Yeah. Women make the house a home.
Without a woman, a man is just an ugly, stable rock, right? And so kind of understanding in terms of how the way they always viewed that in terms of creation, but woman was the last thing, the last creative act God made. He said, all has been built, but it's not good for you to be by yourself, let me put your crown on you. And he gives him his wife. So women were supposed to be that the adorning of their husband.
So do you think the garden was not beautiful without Adam?
Eve? Everything was named organized.
I don't think life was beautiful without Eve. I think there is a longing and a seeking that wasn't being filled within Adam at that time. That's why God says it's not good for you to be alone. I'm preaching on this actually in June when I'm preaching on shepherding your youth. And we're going to talk about a little more about the Hebrew that's behind this, but that's a whole nother episode of this that we can't do.
But what's the question? What's the question?
Well, I was just going to ask you in terms of the beauty, right? Uh-huh. Would you agree with that statement that women kind of get obsessive with it more so than men?
I agree.
Do you feel it's a longing within you? That you always feel like you have to prove your beauty or have to unveil beauty wherever you go?
Not really. I actually appreciate the simplicity. We had this conversation on Saturday with the men's breakfast. I'm like, wow, I love that the men just get together and bring food and fellowship. That's amazing. And for me, I feel like women's ministry makes it really complicated where you have to get there
and make the entire
the decorations, the crafts, the breakfast beautiful.
This is my point. That's my point. Yeah, so then I'm making my point.
Do you agree with the premise that that women are
unveiling beauty?
Yeah.
There's a thing that they say
as a woman.
When you guys planned your,
that's what I heard. I heard it bothers you.
You guys are kind of a weird couple, though.
We are. We're opposites.
Yeah, you are. Like, generally speaking, though, most women don't let men plan the wedding.
I didn't want a wedding.
She didn't even want a wedding.
I know. We had this talk. I'm saying you guys are weird, but most. My wife did not let me, like, she's like, you can go carry the heavy things, right? Because women want to unveil that beauty. There's a thing about, like, when I would plan.
I think I'm the wrong person to ask.
Yeah. Do you remember,
sorry.
Like, even what's Tuesday up? When we, Tuesday night Bible study, we had a, we did one of those fellowship potluck nights. And, like, there was just a few women in the church that, like, Amy Bigos came up and she was, you know, my wife. And then there was just a few, like, Trissa, there was a few of them. They're like, so Valentine's Day. We said, instead of doing the Bible study, we're just going to have, like, a little Valentine's potluck for everybody because we already have childcare and all that. And they're like, well, are you have decorations? And I was like,
no.
Decorations? No. Like, I was like, I got a table. And like, there's this like,
it's just a bunch of white tables.
This white table out. Like, that's where they could put their stuff and we can eat. And she's like, I thought so. And she came in with this bag.
Nice.
And like, she came prepared, understanding. Yes. She's like, man, step aside. Let the woman unveil the beauty. Right. And she made it beautiful and it looked great. Right. Like, that's just not.
I will say, as one who sees all the pictures from the women's events and the men's events, because we do a lot of the social media stuff, the women's events are beautiful. Yeah. They are.
They are,
and a lot of it is also teaching beautiful things as well. It's like the older generation is passing on this unique skill about some aspect of making something beautiful to the next generation of women,
right.
And I think that's
unveiling
awesome
beauty to the
as
world
well.
And. Unveiling beauty
compared to the men's event where we literally went shooting, right. Just took all our guns
and went out
to a random place and just shot. And then the other major event we did are the potlucks where we just
eat food,
put tables outside,
barbecue,
eat show
food.
Up, eat the food.
It was
and
before
then
your
leave.
Time. We used to have axe throwing stations out there.
Wow.
Unfortunately, one of the, it doesn't matter. Oh. That got secured, but it was a great men's event. But the point being though, is that, generally speaking, like, her premise is that women want to unveil beauty. And I think what's interesting here, watch what it says. Do not let your adorning, so you women as the crowns, right? Do not let your adorning, your crowns, be external. The braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry or the clothes you wear, right? Don't make this materialistic. Don't make it about your fashion. Don't make it about, that's not what the real crown in your value and worth is. Mm. What does he say? But let your adorning, your crown, be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is in God's sight very precious. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves by submitting to their own husbands. As Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you are her children, and if you do good and do not fear anything, that is frightening. In other words, if you have to understand, for Sarah to call Abraham Lord, right? Everyone's like, oh, so I have to call my husband Lord? Like, that's not what he is saying. What he is saying is that Abraham was given a promise by God, and she said, I'm too old, so you better just go take my servant, go sleep with her, go fulfill God's promise to you through this young servant of mine, because God, I have no place in God's promise. And Abraham, like an idiot, instead of reaffirming his wife in the same promise as him, says, okay, and goes and does it.
Yeah.
Right? Then, of course, that's Ishmael. And then, of course, she freaks out. We've talked about this before, right? Sends the boy and Hagar away.
And you have the first single mother in the Bible.
First single mother in the Bible. And you keep, so understanding, like, Abraham was called righteous because he walked by faith, but he was also an idiot. Hmm. And Sarah called him Lord. She knew he was an idiot, right? Even when, like, takes him up to sacrifice him on a mountain, like, she's like, that's my Lord. That donkey up there, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The idea being is that what made her beautiful, because Sarah had a lot of failures in that too, but for her is that she, by calling Abraham Lord, was the idea that she submitted to him in things because she disagreed with him.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like we miss the point.
Yeah.
We miss the point. So if you do good and do not fear anything, though, that is frightening. But then it says this, likewise, husbands.
We always right? like to stop at verse 6.
Husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. So again, this is one of those, right, like our target text here. Even when it seems to go to the men, it seems to be very almost derogatory towards women. You know, like you need to be considerate of those weaker vessels, right? That is not it. And this is one of, I think, the things that is very heartbreaking about this verse, because that verse is also supposed to be very uplifting of women. And it's been changed. People get offended by it. People don't like talking about it. They don't want to even study it because I think they're afraid of what it means. This is meant to be very uplifting of women. So let me break it down. Husbands, live with your wives in the in an understanding way, showing honor to her. So you're to live as if, try to understand her to the best of your ability, be considerate, showing her honor. You're to honor her. It's not very honoring to your wife if, particularly in public, you just, the way you treat her is dismissive. Woman, stand behind me. Hey, stop, stop speaking. Stop speaking, right? Men are talking. Oh, cigars. Oh, Randy, right? Like, that is the honor your wife.
Yeah. Elevate her. She's
honor Christ. How do we honor Christ? How do we honor? What does honor mean? Exactly what you said. Elevate, right? Look, boys, if you don't like my wife speaking at this dinner table, we're both out.
Yeah.
Right? We're done.
Support, empower.
You know what I'm saying? Like that you honor her among everybody else. Honor her with your friends, within at work, and whatever you're doing, you honor your wife.
Yeah. One of the things that really, for the how, right, it really, you have to know, right? So you need to know your wife in order to be able to effectively honor her. If you don't know what her dreams, her aspirations, her goals, her desires are, how are you going to be able to elevate her in those things? You know, how are you going to be able to support her in those things? So, like, first off, if you think your dreams and your wife's dreams are the same dreams, then you haven't communicated effectively, you know, with your wife. So first you need to listen and ask those questions so that you can actually do these things of elevating her and honoring her, you know?
So, but this is the piece that gets people, right? So we're to honor her, show honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, okay? Weaker vessel. Let's just kind of break that down, okay? First, weaker, when we think of weak, we always, you know, like weak, like what do we mean by weak? The adjective there for weaker is more in the sense delicate, right?
Oh, interesting.
As the more delicate vessel. Now, you could then say, well, delicate is weak. That's your cultural appropriation on something, right? Why is delicate weak, right? Men and women, again, were both created in God's image. Women who could be more delicate, whether that's emotionally, whether that is in terms of sensitivity, you know, whatever, or that physically. Physically, whatever. Like, yeah, we're not just talking about muscles, right? Women, they have a smaller muscle. Like, that's not what he's saying. Delicacy means the fact that they're sensitive, the fact they like, the fact that they want to unveil beauty to the world, the fact that they want to be romanced, like that delicacy tells us something about the heart of God.
You want to know?
God is delicate. God has that delicacy. Hold on.
Yeah, I've got such a great.
If women want to be romanced, and that's at the core of every one of them, right? Like as a supreme desire of women, they want to be romanced. They want to be pursued, right? That means God wants to be romanced. He wants to be pursued. He doesn't want to, he's going to pursue you with all his heart, but he wants you to pursue him. He's romantic, right? He is somebody, when we sing worship songs, is sentimental to him, right? It's romantic to him. He wants you to pursue him. He wants you to be romantic to him. When you see, oh, she's just being overly dramatic, overly emotional. No, maybe what that's telling you about the character of God is that he's emotional. That may be because you don't think it's a big deal. You're not as angry. You're not as upset. You're not as sensitive.
Yeah.
That shows that God is sensitive to it.
How
you're not sensitive to it because you took the masculine right form of him. She is teaching you the feminine image of God, that God is sensitive to things like that. Yeah. And I just have to finish this because I've noticed this so much.
How emotional is God to send his son to die for us? Like, how much emotion is required to even do something like that? You know, that's not a logical response. That's an emotionally charged response.
Right.
You know, but to continue with your example.
Right, because he's also very sensitive to sin. Yeah. You see this in the inverse in certain regards, right? Like, okay, so you commit adultery. What did the law say? Because the law is the heart of God.
Stone him.
Kill him.
Yeah.
Well, that seems like the heart of God then. Why, he's just being overly emotional, isn't he? He's taking the woman's side there, right? Like, or that's what he's telling you is he's showing you the sensitivity and how serious he takes sin. Right. This is how I treat. I'm this sensitive to sin. Mm-hmm. You think adultery is bad, but you don't think it's worth stoning someone over. I'm telling you, this is how serious and sensitive I am to sin. It's worse than you think it is.
Yeah.
Right. And that's often what I learned from my wife. Sorry,
no,
I'm from the wrong camera. What I learned from my wife.
Come closer. Come.
What I learned from my wife in our marriage is that there's a lot of situations that are bigger deals than I see them as. Like, I don't see, why is that a big deal? Like, they shouldn't be upset by that. And she's like, no, it's a big deal. And like, she has that discernment. She has that element that benefits our marriage, that benefits our ministry that I lack.
Of God's emotional sensitivity. Right?
So she's more delicate and aware of certain things that I'm not. That's not a weakness, that is strength.
Yeah.
Right? That reinforces my mission as a man. Right, it is very beneficial for me to have my wife with me and all that.
Yeah.
Right. So we're talking delicacy.
I want to hit a quick point. So I'm not going to say their names, but we have this youth couple in the church that's fascinating to me because the man in this relationship has a history of just such anger and bouts of just kind of fits of rage. That he's been working through probably his entire life. But the girl that he's with now is very strong-willed, but also very delicate and very girly in how she carries herself. And so I kind of saw a culmination of their relationship on Sunday because she had made him this hat that was like a little... had little bear ears on it. It was super cute. And so I walk up onto the, into the sound booth and I see him sitting there. He's got kind of this almost like a mean mugging face on as he's wearing this hat and she's playing with the ears on his head. And I saw that and I looked at him and I was like, this is why men need women.
Exactly. Right?
Because this is going to make you a better man.
And it's also why men need daughters. I've never felt more like a man than letting my daughter paint my toenails and my, put makeup. She still does it. She's like, can I do your hair and do your makeup? Sure.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
I remember you told us about like the one pink nail and she has.
I don't hate it because I actually adore it. What I hate is makeup. Like, I don't know how you women do it, but you just feel it. You feel the weight on your face.
Yeah.
You try to get it off. It doesn't come off. And then it's like, you start breaking out because it's your pores are all clogged. Like, I'm like, why do they do this? This is awful. Besides the point. But yeah, that's why we need women. Right.
When I said that to him though, he kind of broke in this like half grin and I don't know if he got it, but
yeah,
it looked like he kind of exactly something clicked in his head. It's like, this is why you need her.
Yeah. So the other piece,
she's making you better.
Weaker means delicate, right? It's a delicate, but that doesn't mean worse. That's what men need. Right? And women don't need another delicate person. They need what a man brings, which is more of the stronger foundation who is so oblivious to some of that reality that she's like, hey, knucklehead, come here. Let me explain to you what's going on, right? You need each other, right? So he's saying as the delicate vessel, but notice it says vessel, your said partner. And this is what you got to be careful with Bible translations, because it is not partner. It's nowhere close to partner. Is that word? The word in Greek is vessel, but it's not just vessel. It's not just like a container, right? What it actually annotates? Think about an irreplaceable, like, family heirloom. Mm-hmm. Think about, like, great-grandma's china. Mm-hmm. It's delicate, and it's one of a kind. It's valuable.
It's priceless.
And it's irreplaceable. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the vessel he's talking about. He's saying she is delicate. He's essentially saying, men, for the purpose to which you serve, you better be very considerate and understanding of your wife's perspective, because she is like that irreplaceable, invaluable, delicate, you know, family heirloom, that china, that if you are not careful and you break that, you can't replace that.
You can never put it back together.
You can never put it back together. You can't replace it. There's nothing there. There's no replacement for that. Yeah. Everybody just thinks like, oh, okay, well, this wife's not working. Let me just go put another one there. That's not how that works, right? Everybody uniquely provides their own value. Your wife brings uniquely immense value to you.
I think
that you need to be very careful and appreciative of how she handles and is able to support you in your mission. If you truly care about doing God's will in your life and being submissive to what he is telling you to do, then you should very much care about your wife's perspective. If you don't care about that, then now all the delicacy and all the, you know, emotion and drama and all that intuition that women bring that annoy men because we don't understand it because it's not us.
Like, but it's completely necessary.
But
for
it's
us
completely
to truly be
within
the
image of God,
of
right? That we need to do what we need to do to be in God's will. But if I don't care about God's will, then that stuff that is valuable to me just now just becomes annoying. Right. And you start seeing that, like, okay, you're just being dramatic. Why do you have to be dramatic about everything? It's like, well, maybe if she's being dramatic about everything, you're not listening.
Yeah. You're not paying attention.
And you're not operating within God's will because you're only doing this half-heartedly right now.
Yeah.
There's this whole other element that you need to fully dive into doing what you need to do. So I'm sorry, women. I can't relieve you of the expectation that you have to submit to your husbands. However, here Peter is talking, you need to be very considerate of them and the immeasurable value they bring to them. Like, you would not take your great-grandma's china and then, you know, use those cups to let the toddlers drink out of.
Yeah, let the dog drink out of.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You don't do that. Treat that with high value. You protect it. You keep it safe. You treasure it, right?
Yeah, you also
that's
don't
how
just,
you're supposed to approach your wife.
You also don't hide it away in a box because that's because you're ruining the value of it as well. You know, that
no, it's an adorning.
Yeah.
Most people have a china cabinet if they have that kind of china. Mm-hmm. It is there for, right? It's the adorning of her husband, right? Mm-hmm. She is to bring that beauty there.
It's the crown. And,
so there's, but then I want to kind of touch this though. Okay. So now I get to get a little, this gets a little, say the unpopular part out loud.
Controversial. Well, if you made it this far.
Before I hit that, women have to submit to their husbands. Husbands have to submit to their wives.
Mm-hmm.
So we always go to, you know, Ephesians 5, right? You know, men, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Wives, submit to your husband the way he submitted himself. So we always set this kind of expectation. Men are there to love their wives. Wives are there to submit to their husbands, right? That's Ephesians 5:21. Back up one verse.
Oh.
Okay. Back up one verse. You guys go into it now. I have it written down.
Ephesians what?
Chapter 5.
Right. Yep. Ephesians, I'm on 2, 3, 4, 5. What?
21. What does Ephesians 21 say?
Well, I'll read 22. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. Verse 21. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ.
Boom. Okay.
And then verse 23
No. You don't have to worry about that because you've already made my point.
Yeah.
Wives, submit to your husband, right? We take that. Back up one verse. What is the actual expectation?
Submit to one another out
husbands
of reverence.
Are equally to submit to their wives as wives are expected to submit to their husbands. And so let me say the unpopular part. Okay. Why then, over and over, do we keep seeing wives being called to submit to their husbands in Scripture? if the expectation is that we submit to each other, mm-hmm. okay? So let's just start there, okay? If Imran is expected to submit to you as much as you are to expected to submit to him, right, then why is it constantly coming and saying, Selena, you need to submit to Imran. Selena, you need to submit to Imran. You see what
probably,
I'm saying?
It's probably because you're not.
You see what I'm saying?
Like, it's probably because that's what you're going to struggle with.
More?
Yeah, it's probably
there you go. And this is the unpopular part. I've said this before about men, so let me start there just so I can keep this fair, okay? I think that if God didn't tell men to be the spiritual leaders of their home, they wouldn't be, because I think women make them more natural spiritual leaders.
Yeah.
Women are far more relational than men. That's part of
the, more that, discerning, that, more emotionally
that delicacy that they possess within that piece. I see this all the time in church. You see, it doesn't even matter, like young women, right? Like 20 years old, 21 years old, they're like dragging their boyfriends to church by the ear.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Families, nope. Get in the car. We're going to church as a family. You see women as the natural leaders. I feel like
the natural spiritual leaders.
Natural spiritual home. Leaders in the home.
Yeah.
So if God didn't
and
tell men,
and men want to lead in everything else,
right?
Except spiritually.
If God did not tell men to lead your home spiritually, they would not. It would be women.
Yeah.
So he says you need to step up. Like you need to do this, right? It's actually adding your weakness that I'm giving you that charge. So
if that's
likewise,
true, so if that's true, then
I think the reason why you see often the command for wives to submit to their husbands is because I think women struggle with submission more than men do. And I think you see that a lot with women's interactions to each other. I think, and of course this is not true of everyone. I think everybody has to grow into learning submission.
Yeah.
I don't think women also realize how much men actually submit to women. And this is what I mean. Like submission comes in the little things,
mm-hmm.
right? Like all men, even if your marriage is you feel like falling apart, if I were to go ask that man, would you take a bullet for your wife? You know, every one of them. Yes, absolutely. I would die for my wife,
mm-hmm.
even with our marriage falling apart. Mm-hmm. I would be faithful in that regard. I would absolutely do that. Submit to that fate for my wife in the big things.
Mm-hmm.
Submission comes in the little things, right? The game's on. You've had a long day at work. You're tired. You just want to relax. And then, hey, can you come take the trash out? And then when you're done with that, can you go do this honey-do list? Okay. Will do. And you see, that's submission.
Yeah.
Did you think men just love doing your honey-to-do list? You know, you guys know what I'm saying? Honey-do list?
I don't know what that
is. A honey-do
honey,
list.
Can you do?
Honey, can you do list?
Yeah.
And they like, you know, they'll make a list.
Honey-do list.
Things I need you to do. It's unfathomable to me to ever make a list of chores to give to my wife. You know what I mean? How that would go? I'm just saying, like, I know it's not, I'm just being honest. I'm trying to be honest. Like, and maybe I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very clear that husbands are to submit to their wives. Wives are to submit to their husbands.
Well, men struggle.
Why are
with
wives
this.
Being called out for not submitting to their husbands? Probably because mm-hmm. they struggle with it more. Likewise, men get called out more for not loving their wives properly.
Yeah.
Their way. You see what I'm saying? So you see this where, so are wives not expected to love their husbands? Of course they are.
Mm-hmm.
Wives don't have a hard time loving their husbands their husband's way.
Mm-hmm.
Men have a hard time loving their wives' way,
mm-hmm.
right? Similarly, men probably do a little bit better with submission to their wives than wives do in submitting to their husbands. So it's called out more, right? Like, mm-hmm.
That's a pretty simple explanation because most of the Bible is written that way. Like, Paul wouldn't call out the Galatians for their issues with submission with all the sexual debauchery that was going on. He wouldn't call them out the way that he did if it wasn't an issue. Like, he'd just be talking about something else.
Ephesians in particular, specific context of Ephesians and the Ephesus church is that they had the Temple of Artemis there. I mean, it was one of the seventh wonders of the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I might be thinking of Ephesians and not
Ephesus, yeah. So from there, like, that was a very sexually free society. Like, if you grew up in that culture and you weren't a believer, you were sleeping with prostitutes probably since you were like old enough, you know,
to sleep
like,
with prostitutes.
Right. Like, and it wasn't frowned upon. It was celebrated. It was encouraged. So they probably had this whole lifetime of sexual habit of being able to go choose any one of, you know, a a gorgeous prostitute of one of Artemis's priestesses to go sleep with, right? And even if it's like, oh, I belong to Christ, I don't really believe in Artemis, but I still have this free act. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So husbands, go love your wife the way Christ loved us. Stop that nonsense. Because of that, also with that culture, there was almost this hyper-feminism in Ephesus, because seventh wonder of the world, goddess Artemis, priestesses, the religious authority, were women, yeah. Right? So there was almost just like, we are in charge here, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, no, start submitting to your husbands. So the point being is that for both, the expectations you both submit, and the expectation for both is that you're supposed to make it easy for your spouse to submit to you.
Yeah.
It becomes much harder to submit to your spouse when certain behavior, right, is there. And maybe the reason wives have a harder time submitting to their husbands is because husbands don't make it as easy to submit to as wives make it for us to submit to them.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So even just because it may be calling that out specifically doesn't mean that there's not an underlying cause of that either. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Both are expected to submit to one another.
Yeah, because your wife's not going to submit to your debauchery. Your wife's not going to submit to your sin. Your wife's not going to submit to your chaos, you know? So it's like, if you're leading poorly, then don't expect willful submission. She may, in her maturity, submit to create peace and to hopefully change over time and do all the things that we talked about in Peter. But at the same time, of course, she'll be combative if you're leading in an unchrist-like way, you know? It's like God doesn't say lead your household however you want. He's supposed to lead it in
right.
in God's way.
And you both mean within submission of Christ, right?
Yeah.
So kind of wrap this up then. So one, to the point, right? This isn't your proof text of model of marriage in the sense that like Peter's point was to the larger main point, which was what? Submit
to the emperor.
Well, submit to all human authority for the Lord's sake,
Lord, yeah.
Right? So the first thing, why should we submit? It's all for the Lord's sake and for our witness to the world, right? Submission is for Jesus. So let's say you're like, hey, well, you talked about it. My husband, my wife is not easy to submit to, right? So they're one of those that make it very difficult to, so, you know, God understands that. He sees that. He's fair, right? What does this actual point say? Submit to all human authority for the Lord's sake.
Yep.
You are not submitting to your spouse just for your spouse's sake.
Mm-hmm.
You're submitting to your spouse for Jesus' sake. Hmm. So in other words, in submitting to your spouse, you're submitting to Christ. To rebel against that and not submit to your spouse, you are then rebelling and not submitting to Christ.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? A slave is not really submitting to their master. A slave is submitting to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Right? To go submit to their master, harsh or not, they're not submitting to their master. They're submitting to Christ. Well, for a free people are not submitting to an emperor. They are submitting to Christ. Wives are not submitting to their husbands. They're submitting to Christ. Husbands are not submitting to their wives. They are submitting to Christ. And mm-hmm. I think that kind of central piece, right? All the things that scripture tells Christians to be submissive to, government, right? Be Paul in Romans, be submissive to government, be submissive in your marriage, be submissive to your boss and those authorities, to be right? Like over and over and over, this is a concept. In other words, if you could say it this way, I can show you your submission to Christ based off who I see you submit to.
Yeah.
Right? Show me your submission to other people. I can show you how submitted over you are to Christ, because that's what he's told you to do.
It's out of obedience.
And ultimate submission to him.
Yeah.
Right? I have a few. If you love me, what does he say? Then go love each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you love me, go feed my sheep. If you submit to me, then you need to submit to each other and all the other worldly authorities. If you belong to me, then go be holy, for I am holy. In other words, on things we do on behalf of Christ as believers, we do on behalf of Christ.
Yeah.
When somebody in church offends you and hurts you to where you want to leave the church, he calls you to serve. And how does it love the people of God?
Yeah.
Because I have loved you. submit to that. When people hurt you, I didn't call you to serve the church for the church's sake or to serve a pastor. You're serving the church because you're serving me. Yeah. I told you to go serve the church. So when somebody hurts you, you have no excuse to disconnect fellowship with them. Well, let me just be very clear. I don't mean there's obviously some things that you're like, I need to disconnect fellowship from.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What I'm saying is that just because somebody has hurt or offended you and you don't want to resolve it with them, it's just easier for you to leave and go to the church down the street.
Yeah.
He says that that's not honoring.
Mm-hmm.
Go handle this the way I told you to handle it, right? Go, or maybe it's a dispute with the pastor. Go submit to your pastor on this, right? Because in doing so, you're submitting to me. By serving them, you're serving me.
Yeah.
So first, we submit for the sake of Christ and our witness, right? We do not submit to our government on things we disagree with because we agree with them. We're submitting because we love Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And if a believer, if we lack submission in our walk, we are not attractive to people.
That's true. It is
our faith and our walk that is supposed to draw people to Christ.
Yeah.
We just become annoying. So you could prove yourself right, right?
And people love to do that.
Right.
That's the easy thing.
And
to
get
do.
The world to hate you.
Yeah.
Or you could be submissive where everybody else would say something to prove themselves right. You submit to draw people in for the sake of Christ.
Yeah. But that's not to dismiss your point. You still bring up, this is right, this is true, and this is accurate, this is what I believe, but I'm submitting because that submission is all, you are in a position of authority, and so I'm submitting because this is also what I'm called to do. Because
if you don't submit, the world doesn't see light, they see a problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you don't want people looking at Christ as a problem. You want them looking at him as the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, it's not just for the Lord's sake, but by doing good that we can silence the talk of ignorant and foolish people.
Mm-hmm.
So people could come at you all day. They're going to still mock you. They're going to do that. But you continue doing good the way you should, and you continue to submit, right? Not being that problem,
mm-hmm.
right? Just to be the problem, but instead being submissive in that. You're going to silence their foolish talk because other people are going to look at that and be like, dude, that dude's an idiot. Like, you see the way that he was making fun of these people are amazing. And they may even be somebody that they're like, I'm not sure I believe in Christianity and the Jesus thing, but I do know that those are good people and they did not deserve that. And you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Your actions will silence foolish talk. Mm-hmm. Your words and your tweets and your Facebook posts and all of that doesn't draw them to you, right? So first is for the Lord's sake and witness. Second, we already kind of hit it, but submission applies to all believers, regardless of gender, regardless of your race, economic or social status, in marriage, whether you're husband, wife. This is an expectation to everybody. And then the last thing I would, well, really just last two things, submission to the character of your spouse. When it says men, you are to be considerate of the delicacy and the value that your wife brings in a marriage. If she feels like you're not being considerate and you feel like you are, right? Like, no, what do you mean I'm not being? In my best way, I've been considerate to you. And she's like, I don't think you have been, right? It doesn't matter what you think. Submission to that is then saying, I submit to what your view of that is. You're saying I'm not being considerate enough. How am I not being considerate enough? I will submit to that.
Yeah.
Help me become more considerate.
There's a line from the video game God of War where the main character tells his son, don't be sorry, be better.
That's where you get that from.
and it's like, it's kind of interesting there because that's what your point reminded me of. It's like, don't just... It's like, even if you admit that you're sorry, like, don't just say you're sorry and do the same thing over and over again, you know, be better.
Right. And if we've talked about this before with, you know, cheating, right? Like Selena may have a completely different view of what cheating means compared to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You see this a lot with porn. Like you see this with couples where she's devastated as if he cheated. He's like, look, like, I don't think it's okay. Like they feel very embarrassed and ashamed, but I don't think I cheated. I don't think I broke a covenant with her. I'm not saying it's right. I just don't think it's cheating. Right. And she's just in tears, broken. Like, no, I think that's cheating. They never had that conversation. Mm-hmm. Right. Like a very healthy conversation for particularly newlyweds who are about to get married. If you're engaged, what does the other consider cheating? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you think cheating is. What only really matters is what she thinks cheating is.
Yeah. And vice versa.
Right. Like that's all that matters. You need to submit to those things, mm-hmm. submit to that character. I would say in terms of the character of the differences between men and women, right? Like for men, if God values the imperishable inner quality of a woman and says that's her adorning, mm-hmm. that's her crown, if that's what God values, that's what we should value mm-hmm. more so than anything, right? And we should affirm our wives in the fact that, yes, you're very, very pretty, but it's just a reality. Okay, like men and women just have to accept this. No matter how good looking you were when you were younger in your youth, mm-hmm. at some day point, you're going to be 85 years old, raggly, saggy, not moving around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, well, how do people stay together for 50, 60 years? It's not because of outer beauty.
You better start looking and appreciating your wife for that inner value that she has.
Yeah.
And you know, certainly women, you know, pursue your internal value in Christ more than the external, right? And
yeah.
You even see
pursue like, the inner beauty instead of the plastic surgery.
Right. Like, but you see it in church, right? Like you see some people gravitate to their church cliques based off their fashion. Like, oh, she dresses like me.
I've never seen that right. Consciously. I've never consciously noticed that.
You'll notice it. You'll notice people will naturally gravitate. Like I can like, it's to the point where I'm able to see new people coming in and I'm able to look at the couple, like I know exactly who they're going to fit in with. Mm. And I've yet to be proven wrong. Some of it, that's just naturally of like where people are in life. So it's not like it's all wrong, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, but there have been times where I've seen certain women gravitate towards each other just because they could tell that they like shopping at the same stores as them and they don't mm-hmm. consider other people maybe because of that element. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's everybody. I'm just saying as an example, like women should stop valuing the external so much, start valuing the internal mm-hmm. and start emphasizing looking for within self and others, the internal value of women and appreciating them for that as well. Right. So I had a few other points here, but we'll move on. Cause I know it's
how did you teach this all in 45 minutes?
I didn't have you interrupting me with good. That's true.
That's fair.
It does add a lot. I mean, it really does. this is probably an hour when I first taught it. But the last thing is submission is relative to the human authority, right? Like mm-hmm. what submission looked like to government, what submission looks like to husband, wife, what that looks like to a boss, mm-hmm. that changes over time, cross cultures, right? Submission is also very relative. You know, in the 50s, what a wife submitting to a husband or a husband submitting to a wife looked like looks much different than it probably does now.
Yeah.
Right. The same thing goes in terms of your interactions with your boss. Mm. Right. There's certain things that are acceptable now with your boss that if you would have done that, you know, back in the 1920s, that would have been considered like disrespectful. Like
yeah.
if you were to say, invite your boss over for a barbecue on a Saturday, you would have never done that. Like prior probably to like 1960. Right. Mm. Like, there's just things change. Right. Yeah. So, you have to also look at things within its context, its culture as it is now mm-hmm. to understand that balance of what does submission in this situation look like?
Yeah.
And again, doesn't mean compromising, mm-hmm. but submission, what does that submission look like? Yeah. Like
it's like we don't have the Roman capital, not Roman, sorry, what was it called? The tower where they had all the priestesses and all that in there. And we don't have that. Where they go and they just have sex with all the priestesses, but we have, you know, all these websites,
right?
You know, that technology, we don't have this temple that we go to fornicate with random people, but we have
this computer that can bring you to 80,000 different temples.
Exactly.
Right. And so, yeah. we are to compel people in faith based off of our good action. We're not to compel them. We are to draw them. Mm. Or what should be compelling about us is our conduct that draws them in, right? Submission does that because we're ultimately not really submitting to them. We're submitting to Christ in our witness, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to be very hard to do if that's not the most central piece of your life. If Christ is not the center, glorifying him is not the center, being the best witness and disciple you can be of Christ is not your center, submission is going to be very, very hard for you.
Mm-hmm. It's very true.
Right? And what you also find why a lot of people have a hard time submitting to other people, it's just a higher elevation of self in that situation. Hmm. Right? Like, yeah, I value you. I just value myself far more.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? So that's why that humility needs to be there. And then that's why men understand the value of your wife. You can submit. If you really, truly understood her value, what she brings to you, you'd have no problem submitting to her.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because it's worth it. Mm-hmm. And if women looked at their husbands and began to trust them and understand, and again, making it easy to submit, but understanding the value that their husbands provide them, it's easier to submit to, right? Mm-hmm. All the same, right? Like, so submission must be pure to lead to pure faith. But ultimately, though, submission in itself, very Christian concept that we don't talk about enough, in my opinion. And it touches every relationship we have, not just from this way with Christ, but with each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like one of those lost arts, but I had plenty of examples here, but I know we're already much out of time. Hey, it was our last episode for a couple of months. So, or whenever we come back. So, I guess I'll open up for you guys. Did you have any lasting thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's really important to know this, to have a healthy church. Because if you don't, that's when you have separation in the church and just a lot of disagreements.
Same with marriage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Right? This is with anything, any relationship, you could make that statement of, and it requires a lot of denying oneself.
Absolutely.
You know, as you said earlier, deny thyself and pick up your cross and follow him.
Yeah,
he submitted to us before he asked us to submit to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he submitted himself to the government authority. He submitted himself to the religious authority.
Yeah,
he was washing feet the night before he was arrested. Follow the example of your rabbi.
Yeah. Like the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve, you know. The final point I was thinking of too was we didn't talk much about just the relationship between like kind of the father and the son and the father and the daughter, mother and their sons and daughters as well, because that submission and that love has to be present there as well too, and it's its own unique dynamic that we have to work through. So overall. Right, so one of the very first topics that we ever heard you talk about, and as we came to the church, this is what your kind of like main topic that other people told us, like, oh man, Brian should tell you about his submission a series that he did, or his submission.
Full circle.
Yeah. Right, and so now after, you know, 3 years of being here.
It was probably better then because it was, it was all new and fresh for me too, and I was all fired up. I don't know.
Yeah, I think if we had done that then, though, I think we would have both just been, you know, crying, or I don't know. I don't know if, you know, if we were ready to hear it then.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It's like, But thanks for bearing with us too. I know we talked about like starting off in the closet downstairs, and then we took the podcast to our living room, and then we moved the small office, and then we're like, we need a bigger office.
We actually converted our master bedroom. Selena moved the entire master bedroom into one of the smaller rooms, and then we turned the master bedroom into a studio/office space, and that's where we were for the past about a year.
And so every time Ryan showed up, I was like, this is different. I don't like it.
And now we actually have this spot here at the church to record just in time for us to leave.
I know.
You know, but now it's just in time for you to be able to continue it here, you know, whether with us or with another group. Like, it's something that we can do.
I should get like a pull down, like,
I was thinking the
Palms, real Bible story Palms Church and Real Bible Stories banner.
No, because you're going to interrupt the treatment.
Don't. I know. Well, I'll do it when you leave, when you can't see it.
And I'll hear it. I'll hear it. Like, I hear paper rustling in the background. What's going on?
How's that? Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Thank you so much, Ryan, for everything. And whether we continue doing this in a few months or this ends up being the final episode, I feel at peace. You know?
Amen.
This has been an absolute journey, and it's been amazing.
I hope we can keep it going, because it's been a blessing to me too. But everything has a season. Everything, you know, as Ecclesiastes, right? Like, there's a season for everything, and season for healing, season for fighting, season for crying, right?
Yeah.
There's a season for podcasts, and sometimes there's a season not for podcasts. Mm-hmm. So we're at least going into a season of no podcast for a little bit. We'll be in diligent prayer until then, and yeah. I think God will make it very clear very obvious on our hearts.
Yeah.
Once we get, once you guys transition, hopefully safely and without any problems, and you guys get your house that you're trying to get, mm-hmm. And as you guys do that whole transition and start a new journey there, it becomes obvious. And you know, because you're also going to find another church family out there that you're going to hopefully fall in love with and serve the way you've loved and served us here. And, you know, this may be something that we have to let go at that time. And maybe not. Maybe you hate it there and you're like,
I'll come back to an
episode. The highlight of our day is just doing the podcast. Right? Yeah. You know? No, but
this has been my favorite thing coming out of 29 Palms is the podcast, for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's something you are that we really needed spiritually.
Certainly one of my favorite people that we've had. So we're going to miss you. Part of me, we should just keep the podcast just so I can talk to you guys still.
That's one of the main reasons why I want.
Like selfishly, just to stay connected to Palms. Yeah,
that's if you don't happen to get a bunch of flat tires on the day you're supposed to leave. Oh, but man. I don't know how that would happen.
That's crazy. I don't know. You're not the first person to threaten to cause
That's
harm.
Good to know, because that means you can't ever like say, yes, Ryan said he would do it.
There's at least three different families that have threatened us to stay. Well,
each one of us will just take our own tire.
Yeah. And together we...
Oh, no.
But we love you guys. And to those you know who are listening and who have been listening, we do feel encouraged by a lot of the things that you guys write. That when you guys talk to us, particularly those in the church and the encouragement, because as you can kind of see, we just talk to each other in these walls. And but your guys' interactions have blessed us. I've grown in this. This format is not what I'm used to. It's not what I am typically ever like preferable of, right? Like, mm-hmm. But I've been able to grow a lot in this as well. So for this season, you know, as we go into this break, you know, whatever God has for on the other end of this, just know that we appreciate you all. And it's been a blessing with you guys here, because no matter after what happens after this, we're not going to be in the same room doing it. So this is really
this is the last time.
This is the closing of a chapter for us that we're not going to be able to meet and talk for an hour and a half before drinking coffee and eating your amazing street corn dip. I tried. You gave me the recipe and I completely botched it. but you know, it's this is an end for us. So. But I love you guys.
We love you too.
Man. So,
yeah. Amen to that. So, with that, hopefully, God willing, we will see you on the next episode of Real Bible Stories. Goodbye.
There are only a few things I know. I know that He rose. I know that He loves me so. I know that He won't let go. Only a few things I know. I know that He rose. I know that He loves me so. Know that He won't let go, yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me. This I know.